Eliasim. Peace be upon Eliasim. Now, first of all, about the recitations of this verse, we know that we have at least 7 different recitations of the Noble Book of Quran.
Yes.
And it's been a matter of discussion among both Shia and Sunni scholars of recitation of the Quran and exegesis of the Quran, how we need to, recite the verse. Is it Eliasin or Aliasin, or there might be other?
Or even Elias, maybe the prophet Elias, isn't it?
According to the recitation of Eliasin, there are 2 explanations. One of them is that it is another name for Prophet Elias. Mm-hmm. So as I mentioned, the famous recitation of this verse is Eliasin, but there is another recitation according to which it is Aliasin. Now, we know that we have a prophet called Elias. There is no doubt about that. And of course, there are discussions about the biography some of the biographical points of this prophet and whether he is the same prophet as Idris or a different prophet. We're not going to talk about that discussion. But now the point is that who is Eliasin and who are Aliasin? So we have 2 recitations. The famous one is Eliasin.
Okay.
And the other one is Aliasin.
Yes.
So if you recite it like Eliasin, who is referring to? Or who are the people meant by Eliasin?
Yes.
The first viewpoint, which according to Tabari, the famous Sunni scholar, many reciters of Mecca, Kufa, Basra, they recited the verse Eliasin together. So it's not 2 words, it is Eliasin. And they believe that it is another name for Prophet Elias. And they have some arguments because they believe that in some cases, the Hebrew words, when they come into Arabic languages, they may have 2 different pronunciations. For example, we have for some of the angels, for one of the angels, we have Mikal and Mikael. For Prophet Abraham, we have 2 names in Arabic, Ibrahim or Abraham or Abraham.
Yes.
We have Tur Sina, and another pronunciation is Sinin. So they say that Elias has as a prophet, we have 2 Arabic words for it. One of them is Elias, and the other is Eliasin. So the first viewpoint is that Eliasin in this verse is exactly referring to the prophet that we know, and his name is Elias. And, of course, as I mentioned, some people believe that it is referring to the same Idris.
That's right.
Tabari himself seems that he believes in the same viewpoint. He says that this verse is referring to the efforts done by this prophet, Elias. And he brings some narrations from the companions of the prophet and Tabi'un, meaning those people who did not see the prophet. Rather, they saw the companions of the prophet.
Yes.
They believe that Eliasin is one of the names of Prophet Elias, who is one of the prophets of the children of Israel.
If you see the Holy Quran, in Surah Muzammil, ayat number 20, Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala says, and recite as much as possible from the Quran. As much as possible. Rabbana ma
khalaqta hadha. That's why they say one of the beauties of the eloquence of the fasahat and balaghat of the Quran is that whenever you open the Quran, it's as if it speaks to you today very, very clearly.
The Quran is a covenant of God for His creature. It is misaq. It is covenant for His servants. It is necessary for the Muslims to read this covenant and recite 50 verses every day.
عاقلا سبحانك فقنا عذاب النار.
So Prophet Yasin refers to Elias, and El might refer to the people of Elias. Or
no,
no.
The first viewpoint is that no, Eliasin is the same, is another name for Elias.
For Elias itself.
Like we have Mikael, Mikael, we have Sinin. Elias has, the prophet Elias, as one of the prophets in Banu Israel, has two pronunciations in Arabic language.
Yes.
One of them is Elias and the other is Eliasin. The second viewpoint is that Eliasin does not mean the prophet Elias himself. Rather, it means those people who are attributed to Prophet Elias. We know that in Arabic language, when we want to... in that case, Eliasin is the plural form of Elias. And Ya Nun here is referring to the fact that Eliasin is, a plural word. So this viewpoint, which has been also mentioned by Tabari, is referring... to this point that Eliasin is referring to those people who are attributed to Elias.
Yes.
Meaning that, I mean, his family or his companions and those who followed him. So Elias is one of the prophets of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Eliasin is referring to those people who followed him or maybe his family members who followed him.
And since this phrase, as you said, is repeated in Surah Safat, isn't it?
It's been mentioned only once in
one Surah Safat. And the chapter Safat is usually about the stories from different prophets of Allah. So it seems it could be Elias. The main guess is that Yasin could be the Elias.
Yeah, I mean, not Yasin, Eliasin in this verse for sure. I mean, the main idea is that it is referring to Prophet Elias himself.
Elias, that's right.
The second viewpoint is that it is referring to the family and the followers of Prophet Elias.
Uh-huh.
And these two viewpoints are based on the recitation of Eliasin.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the third viewpoint is regarding those people, belongs to the people who have followed the other recitation of this verse, which is Eliasin. So, as I mentioned, there are two viewpoints about the recitation of this verse. According to the famous recitation, it is Eliasin. But according to another recitation, we have Eliasin. So, mainly those people who believe in the recitation of Eliasin, they believe that Yasin, according to the Noble Book of Quran in chapter Yasin, is one of the names of our Prophet, peace be upon him, and his family. And it's been mentioned in some of the narrations in both Shia and Sunni collections of hadith.
That's right.
That Yasin is one of the names of our Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, and his family. It's been quoted in some of the narrations. So, based on this explanation, Ali Yasin is referring to the progeny of the Prophet,
yes.
And we know that it is referring to the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam. So according to this explanation, this verse is one of the verses talking about the holy progeny of the Prophet, peace be upon him, and his family.
That's right.
So these are the main three viewpoints. And regarding the last viewpoint according to which it is Ali Yasin referring to the family of the Prophet, one point that may confirm this fact is that Ali Yasin, according to some narrations, is one of the names for the progeny and for the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam. In that case, we have one of the very famous ziyara texts for Imam Mahdi, may Allah hasten his reappearance, which is known as Ziyarat Ali Yasin.
Yes.
And it begins with Salamun ala Ali Yasin, peace be with the progeny of Yasin, referring to the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam. So this ziyara also may confirm the viewpoint according to which it should be recited as Ali Yasin. Of course, this is not the famous one.
Okay.
But those people who believe in this recitation, as I mentioned, they believe in it referring to the Ahlul Bayt. And this ziyara text may also confirm this viewpoint. But as I mentioned, there is no doubt about the fact that the famous recitation is Ali Yasin. And the final point is that according to some scholars, it's not contradicting to believe that a verse may refer to different meanings and layers of meaning. So, Eliasin, in the first stage, And in the first yes. apparent layer of the meaning, it's referring to a prophet. But another, more profound layer of the meaning of the same word may refer to the progeny of our prophet, which are the Ahlul Bayt.
And can we say that since the Ahlul Bayt were the continuation of prophethood, the imamate, and this surah, one of the main concepts and the phrases is about the concept of, we can say, Nabuwwah and monotheism, and names the prophets exactly. So the Ahlul Bayt are the continuation as Ali Yasin or Prophet Muhammad. So this is a continuation of the ways and the path of prophethood?
It's a good point, but based on the explanation that I mentioned, yes. it's not in accordance with the apparent meaning of the verses.
Yes.
It is based on the deeper
hidden
understanding
meaning,
of the verses
yes.
mentioned by the narration of the Ahl al-Bayt alayhi wasalam.
Thank you very much, Sheikh, for a nice yes. elaboration. Thank you very much, Sheikh Karimi. It was very kind of you. Really, I enjoyed talking to you. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to us. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. See another episode. God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Inna fil jannati nahran laban. Inna fil jannati nahran laban. Li Ali wa Hussein. لعلي وحسين وحسن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Russian prisoners of war being executed by Ukrainian soldiers. Multiple videos have been released on Ukrainian Telegram channels. The most recent shows 11 Russian soldiers shot in the head after being detained. While both sides accuse each other of war crimes, Kiev is openly flaunting the crimes committed at the hands of its troops. At a press conference in Lugansk, a Russian soldier, Dmitry, recounts what happened when he was captured on the front line.
They ordered me to lie down, hands behind my back. One of them came up to me and hit my back with the handle of his machine gun. They put a bag on my head and waited for their commanders. In some time, the commander came, took the bag off my head, took me by the throat and started to cut my left hand with a knife. It's still functioning badly. He hit me in the teeth. And afterwards, when they took my machine gun from the vehicle, he asked if it was charged. I answered that it wasn't. He took the cartridge from it, clicked it, pointed at my leg and clicked. Nothing happened, because it was really not charged. He said I was lucky.
On the screen, gruesome images. Russian authorities say they have evidence of torture and a lack of provision of basic medical care, leading to unnecessary death.
Now, many of these atrocities are being ignored by media outlets in NATO countries, but Russian journalists, of course, are here transmitting to a Russian audience, which means large parts of the Russian population are becoming increasingly angry at Ukraine and its NATO backers for atrocities committed against Russian soldiers.
The videos that show Russian prisoners of war being essentially murdered after they've surrendered have been posted by Ukrainian soldiers. These are videos taken by Ukrainian soldiers and then posted on the internet, essentially as a point of pride, in the belief that they are somehow another frightening or horrifying the Russians, who knows. But I also think there's another sinister dimension to this. I think there's an interest in Ukraine, particularly in Kiev or Kyiv, to ensure that there can be no negotiated settlement between Ukraine and Russia, not so much because of people in Kiev that might be willing to talk, but I think there's growing fear that Washington will ultimately abandon them.
As Russia continues to destroy energy infrastructure and kill Ukrainian soldiers on the front lines in Donbass, and as Ukraine continues to shell civilians in Donetsk and release videos of its war crimes, anger is reaching new heights on both sides, making peace an even more distant prospect. Jenny Miller, Donbass.
The repercussions of the war in Yemen and the difficult economic conditions continue to take a heavy toll on Yemeni patients. Yemen's Ministry of Public Health and Population held a press conference to shed light on the impact of the continued Saudi siege on thalassemia patients. Those suffering from this disease need to get blood transfusions every 3 weeks and must stay on medication for life.
Our main concern is the lack of medicines for thalassemia patients. These medicines, if available, are very expensive in addition to the lack of necessary medical examinations. We have 20,000 registered patients, while the real numbers are many times higher. These children need special medical care, and we hope that international organizations will stand by them by providing them with what they need.
The Yemeni Health Ministry has recorded nearly 500 deaths due to the lack of only one of the drugs used to treat thalassemia. The ones grappling with the disease seem to be losing hope as time goes by. With their health constantly deteriorating, they are desperately asking for help from international organizations, including the UN.
We suffer a lot from thalassemia. Medicines are not available. We need expensive medicines such as growth injections. We also suffer from a shortage of blood donors, which is what we need continuously.
We greatly need to be provided with important medicines that have not been available since the beginning of the war, such as iron withdrawal treatments. Because our iron level is high due to frequent blood transfusions, which also causes frequent infections.
Saudi Arabia's siege on Yemen and the ensuing shortages of food and medicine is putting more lives at risk every day. The healthcare system is feeling a massive strain, and the international community has yet to take any definitive steps towards ending the crisis here. Abdul Latif Loshali, Sana'a.
The Italian government has been authorized to send, when it sees fit, military assets, materials and equipment to Ukraine until December 31st next year. The go-ahead has arrived from Italy's lower house, the Chamber of Deputies, which has passed a motion presented by the right-leaning parties backing the government coalition and supported by some opposition groups, including centre-left Democratic Party and centrist Italia Viva Azione. Italy has so far classified the arms it has been sending to Ukraine, but some media have suggested the next package will likely include air and missile defense.
9 months after the start of the conflict, sending weapons to Ukraine is no longer the way to go. We must put peace talks on the table and work all together for a UN-backed peace conference promoted by the EU.
Support for Ukraine has been a contentious issue within the ruling coalition, with Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni positioning herself as a staunch supporter of Kyiv. However, her partners Matteo Salvini and Silvio Berlusconi, respectively leaders of the League and Forza Italia parties, have been so far much more ambiguous due to their historical ties with Moscow and President Vladimir Putin. The two have repeatedly stressed the urgency of stepping up efforts to promote peace negotiations.
Giorgia Meloni is firmly
and strongly linked or attached to the partnership and the alliance in with the United States and with NATO. So I don't think she will do something to promote compromises or peaceful or diplomatic solution.
NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg has recently said, quote, "The Western alliance intends to keep fighting for Ukraine until it wins back all the territory Russia has seized since 2014. However, there seems to be an open wedge between the parliament and the Italian people. Latest polls show that more than half of Italians advocate for peace negotiations between Russia and Ukraine, and only a third are okay with a country sending more weapons to Kiev.
Peace talks must be started now. They have to find a solution to end this war. This situation is dangerously taking us toward a brink.
We are being run by governments of weaklings in the pocket of NATO, and the Meloni government is no different. Our constitution clearly says Italy rejects war.
It's not anymore a war between Russia and Ukraine. It's about all of us. We begin to feel exhausted.
The approval of the motion in the lower house on supplying weapons to Ukraine also included a provision which increases military spending to 2% of GDP by 2028, as required by NATO. The motion is currently under discussion at the upper house. The Senate will have the final say on the matter. Max Civili, Rome.
Pakistan has hosted a dialogue platform for the OIC member states to boost cooperation among them in the field of science and technology. Senior officials representing Iran, Kazakhstan, Tunisia, Qatar, Malaysia, Indonesia, and Pakistan attended the meeting, while Saudi Arabia, Morocco, Turkey, Azerbaijan, United Arab Emirates, and Cameroon participated via video conference. The first senior officials meeting of the OIC Forum was aimed at strengthening scientific cooperation and to encouraging major technological initiatives.
This forum provides us opportunities of bilateral, multilateral cooperation. So one or two or several countries can work together. With Iran, of course, we have a very strong cultural, historical, and scientific collaboration. And of course, Pakistan and Iran can work together.
Iran's Deputy Science Minister, Peyman Salehi, told the meeting that OIC was established to strengthen unity and collaboration among Islamic countries. He offered the participants Iran's cooperation in the field of science and technology.
This collaboration between 15 countries may have a very fruitful outcome in the near future. Therefore, we arranged for the first meeting of ministers that will be held, I think, about 4 to 6 months later.
The Iranian minister further said that despite the sanctions imposed by the West, Iran is self-sufficient in the field of science and technology and has invested big in its infrastructure and commercialization of technology.
In 2021, Iranian scientists published about 78,000 papers, peer-reviewed papers in international journals, and at the moment we are in the rank 15 in the world. We have established about 50 science and technology parks in Iran, more than 240 incubators, and so on.
Participants in the meeting discussed in detail the objectives, terms of reference, and working procedures of the OIC 15 and recommended them for adoption by the ministerial committee, which is scheduled to be held in the near future.
The presence of Iranian officials in the OIC meeting shows that Iran is not dependent on the East or the West, and it's ready to boost its political and scientific cooperation with various countries across the globe. Nasser Kazmi in Islamabad.
South Korea's container and cement truck drivers are out in the cold on strike with no extension to an agreement they say ensures safe cargo transportation and livable incomes. The union also wants tanker trucks, auto carriers, and delivery vehicles included in their deal. The strike action has widened to Seoul Metro Subway, with other transportation workers also threatening walkouts.
Believing in the government's commitment to the constitution and expansion of the safe freight system, we held off the strike and waited. But the system expires in a month, and the government's promise has not been kept. So we had no choice but to bring out our last card, the strike card.
Slowdown in construction and cargo delivery has already caused hundreds of millions in damages each day, with 5,000 truckers off the job. The slowdowns are rippling through South Korea's export-led economy as the strike enters its second week. President Yoon Suk-yeol this week ordered cement truck drivers back to work, with construction companies reporting losses into the tens of millions of dollars.
The foundation of our industries is in danger of being devastated. Even people's daily lives are being threatened. There is no way to justify the act of taking the lives of people and the national economy hostage to accomplish their own interest.
The Yoon administration has vowed to deal sternly with the illegal strike action.
The truckers were on strike just 5 months ago, but that strike only ended with the extension of the safe trucking freight rate system through the end of this year. With the government's back-to-work order, the truckers are threatened with fines and even jail sentences for those refusing to get back behind the wheel. Frank Smith, Wee Wang, South Korea.
Yemen is on the road to achieving self-sufficiency, with government plans and strategies aimed at doubling and expanding Yemeni agriculture and local food production. On this trip to a Yemeni farmland, I am accompanied by Wajih Al-Mutawakkil. The man is in charge of vegetable production in Yemen. Al-Mutawakkil is one of the government officials leading the campaign to revive Yemen's rich agriculture. He is here to show us the agricultural projects the government is funding.
We are now on the outskirts of Sana'a, right behind Sana'a International Airport, and beyond this point is where Yemen's agricultural renaissance is beginning to take place. Here, there's farmers that are planting crops such as garlic, onions, barley, and wheat. And these are crops that are vital to keeping the Yemeni economy afloat and keeping Yemenis from going hungry during this strangling economic blockade imposed by Saudi Arabia.
One of the ways to counter food shortage in Yemen is through the launch of water-based greenhouse projects.
These are the greenhouse projects we launched. There are about 8 on this farm. These are water-based greenhouses, which means we plant crops using gravel instead of soil. This gravel is extracted from the Yemeni mountains. This greenhouse project is made up of organic natural materials found only in Yemen.
Outside of these gas houses is an even more vital crop being harvested in acres of land that stretch beyond the horizon. Yemeni wheat. According to the Ministry of Agriculture, Yemen imports an estimated 4 million tons of wheat a year from foreign countries. To achieve self-sufficiency status, Yemen must produce its own wheat in order to eliminate its dependency on foreign imports. Farmers on the outskirts of the Yemeni capital are answering the call to produce more wheat.
This portion of the wheat is ready to be reaped, while the rest of the field is going to take another week to a week and a half before it is ready.
I like to take the wheat and grind it with my hands. Then I blow away the flax, and now it's ready for consumption.
As food production increases, many organizations have been formed to help achieve food security. Huan Foundation for Development in Agriculture is one of them. Huan Foundation educates Yemenis on the importance of helping the advance of the nation through agricultural initiatives. Buwan also specializes in the production of basic foods from a combination of Yemeni seeds and grains at their local factory. They have even started their own brand of flour and healthy snacks sold in and out of the country. Buwan's president believes that Yemen's high-quality agriculture must be revived in order to provide healthy food options for Yemenis and to eradicate some of the diseases caused by imported foods.
International organizations are playing and have played a large role in destroying Yemeni agriculture. They did so by exporting grain and wheat to us, which is often rotten and contains harmful substances like chemicals. Additionally, these grain shipments that enter Yemen have passed their expiration date, which results in a lot of illnesses.
After the revolution of September 21st in 2014, achieving self-sufficiency in Yemen is no longer an impossible task. According to Yemen's Ministry of Agriculture, if local food production continues to increase, Yemen could reach food security in just a few years. The revolution against Western hegemony in Yemen was a starting point towards achieving self-sufficiency, which according to the Ansarullah leader is essential in order to secure food provisions for Yemenis. Yusuf Maudi, the outskirts of the Yemeni capital.
Chile's fallen on relations between Moscow and the Vatican City. The rift has been sparked by an interview published in a U.S. magazine on Monday in which the head of the Catholic Church, Pope Francis, condemned, quote, the cruelty of some minority groups of soldiers, namely the Chechens and the Siberian Buryats, in the Ukraine's conflict. On Tuesday, Moscow's ambassador to the Vatican, Alexander Avdiiv, lodged an official complaint in response. Pope Francis' remarks were made during an interview with America, a Jesuit magazine headquartered in New York. When asked about his apparent reluctance to directly condemn Russia for the war in Ukraine, the pontiff said in response that he received much information about the cruelty of the troops. The Russian ambassador to the Holy See, Avdiiv, expressed anger at the pontiff's, quote, insinuation of alleged atrocities by the Russian military during the course of the special military operation in Ukraine. The ambassador also stressed that nothing can shake the cohesion and unity of the multinational Russian people. The Russian Foreign Ministry also dismissed Pope Francis' comments.
What will the Vatican tell us about the martyrdom of the multinational Soviet people? Maybe it makes sense to first discuss Catholic penance for the 20th century for the Orthodox and for Muslims for the many centuries before that. This is no longer Russophobia. It's a perversion of the truth on a level I can't even name.
Earlier this week, Moscow had welcomed the Vatican's announcement of mediation to bring an end to the Russian-Ukrainian war. Some fear that this could no longer be viable after this diplomatic incident.
I don't think this tense moment will change the Vatican-Russia relations substantially. Moscow still expects the Holy See to position itself as a mediator in the conflict with Ukraine. But whether the mediation takes off will very much depend on Kiev and largely on the U.S.
On Sunday, top Vatican diplomat Archbishop Paul Richard Gallagher had said the Holy See and Pope Francis are ready to provide space for peace negotiations on Ukraine. However, after the announcement, Moscow said Kiev is against any peace talks. Max Civili, Rome.
Voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
While millions of Americans lack adequate health coverage, the Pentagon has a new nuclear bomber to flaunt. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to Common Dreams, peace and economic justice advocates responded to the imminent unveiling recently of the United States Air Force's new $750 million per plane nuclear bomber by reiterating accusations of misplaced priorities in a nation where tens of millions of people live in poverty and lack adequate healthcare coverage. Military-industrial complex giant Northrop Grumman is set to introduce its B-21 Raider. The B-21, whose development was 30 years in the making and whose total project cost is expected to exceed $200 billion, is tapped to replace the aging B-2 Spirit. One thing the world definitely does not need is another stealth bomber, Media Benjamin, co-founder of the peace group Code Pink, told Common Dreams. Benjamin added, "This ominous death machine, with its price tag of $750 million a pop, brings huge profits to Northrop Grumman, but takes our society one more step down the road of a spiritual death." Referring to Rev. Martin Luther King Jr.'s 1967 anti-war speech, saying, "Beyond Vietnam, a time to break silence," in which the civil rights leader called the U.S. government the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today. Noting the B-21's impending introduction, Canadian professor Christopher Stonebanks tweeted recently, "Hey, how's the good old USA doing on free healthcare, eliminating poverty, and accessible education for all? What? Oh, I see. They have a new stealth bomber. Okay, and their citizens are good with that trade-off?" The Pentagon, which recently failed its fifth consecutive annual audit, is slated to get $847 billion in 2023 after Congress rubber stamps the next National Defense Authorization Act, possibly as soon as this month. That's more than the combined military spending of China, India, the UK, Russia, France, Germany, Saudi Arabia, Japan, and South Korea, according to the National Priorities Project at the Institute for Policy Studies, IPS. Meanwhile, CNBC reported most American workers dream of a comfortable retirement, yet many find their money falls short of meeting that goal when they reach their golden years. Much of the problem has to do with how the retirement system has evolved. Pension plans that used to guarantee a stream of post-career income from employers have given way to 401k plans and other retirement accounts that put the responsibility on workers themselves to save. Recently, private and public industry leaders came together in Washington, D.C. at an event hosted by the Employee Benefits Research Institute to identify ways to better help workers avoid a shortfall. U.S. Secretary of Labor Marty Walsh recalled how his father, a construction worker, retired with a pension, an annuity that has enabled his mother to remain financially stable when he died. "There are too many Americans who don't have that future stability," Walsh said. "Having a retirement plan is an essential component of a good job," he added. Yet many Americans don't have any retirement savings or plan at all, and many of those workers are approaching the end of their working careers, Walsh said. For people of color, the situation is even more dire, he noted. Just 36% of black households ages 55 to 64 have any retirement savings, and that number goes down to 30% for Hispanic households. Those that do have savings often have very little set aside, according to Walsh. This is a crisis that we have to address in the United States of America, Walsh said. As many as 57 million Americans lack access to a workplace retirement saving plan, said Ed Morphy, president and CEO of Empower, a provider of retirement services. Morphy said, "We know that if people aren't covered by workplace savings, they don't save. If they don't access through payroll deduction, they just flat out don't save." Employers that do not offer retirement plans include small businesses like daycare centers, hair salons, auto shops, and restaurants that are just trying to make it work, Walsh noted. The lack of retirement plan coverage presents an opportunity for the financial industry and government to work together to find solutions, Walsh said. For too long, the message to workers has been you're not saving enough, and that may be true, but that's certainly not the whole story. California is one of a handful of states that has implemented automatic individual retirement accounts to help bridge that gap for workers who lack access to retirement plans through their employers. The program called CalSavers opened in 2019 to employers with five or more employees. Those that opt out are required to begin offering their own retirement plan per California rules. CalSavers is seeing positive results, according to Katie Selensky, executive director of the program. About 65% of employees who are automatically enrolled in the program stay in.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islamite. Allah my Lord. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله dear listeners, sisters and brothers from all around the world, welcome to another episode of
Youth Station. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته my dear sister and all your listeners there. I hope you're all doing well.
I'm very happy to be here. You
Me
know,
too.
Bita, it's been so long. And when I did not come to here, it feels like a lifetime.
Yeah, exactly. It feels like our hometown somehow.
Yeah.
Here, yeah.
Since we're talking to our friends, to the
exactly.
youth. So it feels home. Bita, yeah. have you, I can't say have you, because now it happens pretty much and we see it in different departments.
Yeah.
Whether it be among your friends or among your relatives or whomever. There are single parents around us
yeah,
that they are
unfortunately
living all alone and then they have some kids. And just imagine these kids are growing up. And then there are plenty much of difficulties.
Exactly. You know, first of all, let's give a kind of explanation of a single parent way of relatives and so on to the listeners. As all you know, a single parent is a person who just has a child or children but have to go under the responsibility of bringing up the child or children himself or herself, as you know.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I think the more damage it causes to the children more than the parents, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
And I have these kind of things in my relatives and also my friends. And when I see them, it may look actually something really natural.
Actually, they
but
have
actually,
too much of problems.
Deep in themselves, I think they have a lot of problems,
yeah.
which comes from these kind of single parent household or something.
Mm. So, you know, there comes a question. Whenever I see these sort of examples, you
yeah.
know, as you just mentioned, we see a lot of them among the relatives or among the friends. And this question rises in my head that couldn't they just stay a little longer for a time when their children are grown up enough to understand what's going on around them?
You mean they sacrifice their time because of their children, even if that person is our children? We cannot do that. It's actually impossible. You know, if it was supposed to, for example, be that good to stay there for the children, it won't come to the point that we have to talk about the single parent, you know what I'm telling you? It's like that, okay, there were some problems, there was something that leads to divorce, I don't know, leads to everything, and you cannot ignore that and tell me that, okay, for that children you have to stay here. It's impossible.
Bita, I'm not saying this. I'm not talking about sacrifice, and I actually did not side with those people who say tolerate the bitterness for the end of your life. I am not of those people.
Okay, you're telling me for 5 or 7 years.
No. Is a lot. Even not this. You know, some 2 years. I'm just saying this.
Yeah.
Sometimes the couples will go for divorce as the first and the last solution that comes to their mind. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, they do it in a heartbeat and they don't question too much.
I think what we actually mostly ignore in our, communication or relation and so on is that we don't talk to each other.
Exactly.
We have
now,
to
let's
talk.
Put it in this point. See, the thing that I wanted to reach to is this very exact thing that sometimes we misunderstand each other. And if we come to talk to each other and if we have even an argument upon something and then come to a conclusion, maybe plenty much of our misconceptions would turn out to be most of them would be solved. Now, let's go for a short break. And then after that, we'll talk about the cause and effect of being a single parent.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back, dear listeners of Youth Station. This is IRIB English Radio. I am here, Asma. And
I'm Bita.
Yes.
Here we're talking about a single parent and, the problems that they are facing among the parents and also the children.
There are some situations in life that might be avoided by some discussions, by talking about it, by clarifying the situations. Maybe we could just reject the idea of divorce.
But from another point of view, maybe the single parent is, for example, in a situation which the other parent or the other partner is dead or something like that. What should we do in that situation? I think even in this situation, the problems, the harm to the children are the same, you know. This situation would happen in the past more and more
this
than today.
This one is worse than the first one,
exactly,
I guess.
Yeah, exactly, because you cannot even imagine of being them together.
Yeah.
This is the problem,
exactly. So now there is a single parent. So it has been divorced, it has been death, some misery has happened. The family has been broken into pieces. Now the mother or the father are going to live alone with their children or with their single child or whatever. So there are too much of problems.
What do you think about the parent or the children are in the most harm in these kind of situations?
I would say children.
Why?
Because the parents have got to the age that they understand what is going on around them. And also, do not forget that they are the cause of this situation.
Yeah.
From the very first point. You know, they have made a choice when they married their partner. And then after some times, they understood that what they have picked among the crowd was not such a dreamboat. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
So it is sort of, if I did it, it is my fault. When I decide to divorce or when something happens that I have to get away from my partner, then I sort of know what is the consequence. And I already am aware.
And it is my choice.
Yeah, and I am aware
divorce.
Of what is going to happen to me. But the poor child does not have any idea about what's going to happen to him or her because they would go to school, they would go to university, and then You know what happens at a school when children start talking to each other, and through those chit-chats, plenty much of things are going to be revealed.
To some extent, I do agree with you that, for example, the children, you know, go to school and somewhere else in social, I don't know, situations, and they were in that kind of things, and they were talking about their parents, there are other children that are normal.
Yeah, they start comparing
that,
each other.
Exactly, and this actually full comparison will lead to, I don't know, anxiety, depression, and so on, because they think they lack something, and actually they lack.
Of course, and you know, I've been reading an article about single parent children. Then it was talking about behavioral problems, you know.
Yeah.
There would come when this situation happens that I am going to be the only parent to my child. Then my child is going to go through too much of traumas without me being aware of them.
Personally, I think that the mother is more important than father growing up the children. But I think these kind of situations that we see around us, like, I don't know, a single parent, just show us that, okay, it's not like that.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them. I mean, the presence of both of them is more important than
both of them.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, through psychology studies, they have proved it that both of them have got a great impact in our life. And the nice thing is that at a certain age, if you do not have a good relationship with your father, then it's going to lead into a trauma. And then at another certain age, if you do not have a certain relationship with your mother, again, you're going to have some traumas and conflicts.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, let's put it after the break. Let's go for a short break, and then I will talk more about that point. Welcome back, dear listeners of Youth Station. Well, we are talking about single-parent households and the children and the things that happen to them. We talked about psychological points. We said that both of them are important. There is no way for us to claim and assert that, okay, if...
the mother is important or something like that.
The mother is more important or the father
is... Which we believe mostly.
Yeah. So now, the very important fact is that now we're talking about it as something which is, you know, we're talking to each other as we're whispering together like a friend to friend.
Our
but the situation needs a serious treatment, you know. You have to perhaps visit a consult or go
to a
specialist, someone who knows about, I don't know, your problem. You can bear your soul out for them and then ask for some advices according to your situation. Now we're just telling our personal point of view.
Yeah, exactly. But let me give you a good piece of news. You know, in the 17th and 18th centuries, at least one child from three children actually lost their parents because of disease or anything, especially the mother.
Yeah.
Because the mother during the pregnancy and something after giving birth to that child would be dead.
Oh,
you know, and
that's
something
so
like
painful.
That. And fortunately, nowadays, because of technology, I don't know, medical science or anything, we are actually we're far away from these happening that one of our parents would be dead or something at the age of birth or something, but unfortunately there are other reasons, like
there are other reasons
there are other reasons which
other
these
reasons
are so dramatic, you know, and drastic, I think, unfortunately, but the beautiful part is that we can avoid this, but we're not trying to. I don't know why.
For example, being a single parent.
Yeah, exactly. You know, from the first actually step. I mean, when you're gonna go through a marriage, you have to imagine the future of this marriage.
Now you're talking about idealistic issues. You know, I agree. You know, I do believe that if you do not want a bad thing to happen, then you have to think about it many times before it happens. No. People don't go for marriage as a very difficult thing. I sometimes wonder how easy people get married.
You have to first consider all the aspects when you want to go through something, especially marriage. And marriage is something that matters, really matters.
Exactly.
It's not only you. There is the future of someone else.
So, dear youth, we're talking about the very first square because the decision for a marriage is a very important decision in our life.
Exactly.
It's going to be a drastic change. It's going to cause a lot of changes to happen into our life. So we should be very cautious about the decision we're making. So picking the perfect pal for yourself is something and then trying to understand him or her is another thing.
Exactly, but you know, despite the beauty of this marriage and so on, it may be a lot of problems with that, you know.
There's even, no maybe, Bita. Yeah. Let me tell you, for sure there must be problems.
Of course, but it may be a lot of problems. Even at any cost, you are considerable, you are conservative of who you are choosing or so yeah. on. But maybe, I don't know, 10 years later, 5 years later or so on, you will face some problems. I think the solution is that you have to seek the knowledge of solving these problems in communications, in relations.
As we just said at the very beginning yeah. of this episode, see, the most important thing is to come to a way of understanding each other.
Exactly.
This is very important. We can study books. We can go through too much of educating ourselves. We can even listen to the experience of other people.
And
you
there
know?
Are many, I don't know, family therapists and so
yeah,
on.
Yeah, there are too much
them.
Of
you know,
therapists.
They are knowledgeable.
Yeah,
they
yeah.
are trained for these kind of issues, and yeah. they will help us. You know, I think running from these kind of, I don't know, places and so on that is a fear which exists in all of the people is something really, it's not true.
And you know what?
You know, you have to correct
as a children of these families, yeah. I would say one thing. All the problems come when, in many cases, I don't say all of the cases, yeah. in many cases I would say selfishness is the reason for all of these
exactly.
things. When the mother or the father, I mean the male or the female part of this parenthood, starts to think of herself or of himself, then the situation is going to go topsy-turvy.
And let me tell you something really bitter. Sometimes the problem of this single parenthood and the children is the children.
Oh, yeah, yeah, sometimes.
You know, and it's so dark that, you know, they are getting divorced because they don't want to go under the responsibility of bringing up the children.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's difficult.
And, you know, there is another point I would love also to mention
yeah.
in here. Sometimes, you know, these early wed people, when you see them, many people, many elders go and advise them, recommend them, okay, bring a child, then your situation is
yeah.
going to be better. If you add another person into
your
company,
family, the
then
connection
everything
will be
is going to be sweeter. This is a wrong notion, you know? You shouldn't go for the idea of bringing up a child
yeah.
before actually giving it a second thought, you know?
You know, you shouldn't be a kind of perfectionist and be like, okay, I have to have everything to
exactly.
bring up a child. But it's not like that, okay? If you bring up a child, everything will be solved. Not
yeah.
at all. It's not like that.
No,
it's,
no.
It's a heavy responsibility that you have to understand it.
Yeah, that's very
and
important.
And then go under this.
So, marriage is a very important decision that you're going to make in your life. There comes problem as you just go into marriage, but you shouldn't give up because there are some certain situations that you can take for the solution of
yeah.
your problems. You can go to therapists, you can ask other people's advice. Of course, a specialist, not every single person,
yeah, exactly.
because there are some people whom chances they might just advise you in a wrong way that would destroy your life even in a worse situation,
so
in a worse
way.
So
let me give you the gist of our conversation.
Yeah.
I think up to here, seek the knowledge of relation.
Exactly.
Nothing else matters.
Yeah. Now, that is the perfect gist to
yeah,
wrap it
you're
up.
Welcome.
Yeah, you have to educate yourself and stop being selfish. Think twice before you make any decision in your life, especially marriage, because it is not an easy thing to do.
And sometimes and then, sacrifice is something necessary.
Yeah. Until another session, I bid you farewell.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi
wa barakatuh.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.